Scoot over, guys, just a little bit. Yeah, he wrote it. No, I've got it, but I don't know it off the top. So should we start? Or should we wait? I don't know if Gus or Kenneth are going to come. But we could start.
Sure, of course.
Well, we're not going to do these right away, so we're going to talk for a couple minutes first. I need to make some more copies. Guys, ready? You want? I'll give you some of these. I've got a couple extra copies, so. So you guys should have gotten the email, right? Everyone except for Xavier. And which church are you from?
Well, I visited St. Catherine's this weekend, so me and my wife are looking for a church.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm actually studying getting an STL, a master's in Orthodox Theology through St. Elias, a small school.
Mm-hmm.
And reorganizing. I spend a week up at Holy Cross, Brookline,
for the Patristic
Institute.
Sure.
And so one of the classes I took was liturgy.
Okay, liturgic. Yeah, tell liturgics. Yeah.
I don't know much about the chant.
Uh-huh. And so are you guys living here?
Yeah, we're living.
In Denver?
Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Oh, I got you.
That's great.
Yeah, that's cool. Good. Welcome. So Michael, John, Pam, Terry, Carissa, Terry, and I'm Michael, and these are my two daughters, well, two of my three daughters, two of my four kids, so. So if you want to give me your email address at the end of class, then I'll add you to the list. Because what I'll usually do is send around an email and usually attach something to read before so we can discuss, and then we go into exercises and stuff for on the. So earlier this week, I think, I sent around a short article that was written it was written about a famous composer, chanter and composer named John Sakellaridis, who lived in Greece over the late 1800s and early 1900s. And so if you wonder how we got in this country to where we are today versus maybe, you know, what could have been a very different point today, you know, a much more traditional point, it's largely attributable to him, to Sakellaridis, for better or for worse, whatever your view is. He was obviously very talented composer and enchanter, but he was also very heavily influenced by Western music, and he was a very talented musician that dabbled in a lot of different things. You know, he received classical training and Byzantine training, and so he kind of jumbled everything up. And like I said, for better or for worse, he had a very wide following in Greece. And it was at a time, and I may have mentioned this before, it was at a time when Greece was coming out, you know, Greece gained its independence from Turkey in the 1820s, right? And so he lived in the 1850s, 1860s. So, you know, Greece was trying to be more Western. They didn't want anything to sound too Turkish or, you know, too Eastern, anything like that. So he came along at a time when the whole climate in Greece, religious, political, everything, was anti-East, pro-West, and it was ripe for someone like him to make an impact, and he did. So at the time when the music that he wrote was popular in Greece, that corresponded to the infancy of the church, the Greek Orthodox Church here in the United States. And so, and I think he mentions it either here or maybe it was in another article, but what seems to be traditional for the United States was really, you know, his stuff, his compositions. And it's not at all traditional on the historical order of things. But in the United States, unless somebody told you, you know, we don't really know any other way, you know, and especially if you don't have exposure to the Patriarchate or to Greek churches in Greece, you know. So the interesting thing is that there are some remnants of his music even in Byzantine chant, right? And so it mentions in there two predominant hymns. What did it say? Phorcilaron and what else? And did it say something else? His composition of Christos Anesti is also used. So when we say Christos Anesti ek nekron thanato thanaton patisas και της εν της μνήμασι ζωήν χαρισάμενο. Ως, when we go, aran. That's entirely not Byzantine, that ending especially. And so, and that's been attributed to him, whether right or wrong, I don't know, but it's been attributed to him. So if you go to a monastery and hear Christos Anesti, it sounds similar. It would go, Christos Anesti ek nekron thanato thanaton patisas ketisen tis mnimasim, down to ba, down to d. Zoi charisamenos the gabupan. So it's much more traditional in Plagal of the First, which we'll talk about later, one of the eight tones, as you mentioned, is the stops in the cadences, as they're called, are on ba, d, on high a, in the middle of the piece, right? And then it always ends on G, on V, not on A. And so, charisamenos, that's A. Charisamenos, that's the traditional. And then the third one, a final cadence, you know, because we always sing them in threes, Christos Anesi, like at the beginning of the service. Logimeni vasilia tu patros ke tu iu, right? Blessed is the kingdom. And then we sing Christos Anesti three times. On the third one, charisamenos, on D again, on ba, you know, so for the third one. And so, anyway, but so the interesting thing mentioned in the article was Phorcilaron, which everybody knows, right? Phorcilaron agias doxis. And it's also the exact melody that's written in the Green Book, although it's translated, O Gladsome Light, or whatever, however they translate it, is brutal. Yeah.
Speaking of the Green Book, where does it fall on the spectrum?
Interesting. The Green Book melodies are largely Sakellaridou's melodies, largely. So if I pulled out, there is a series of Byzantine books that we use. It's called Pandektis. Pandektis was published by a group called Zoi in Greece. And Zoi was sort of a populist continuation of Sakellaridou's, you know, movement, where they really wanted to make the faith more accessible to the people, you know. So in every possible way. So, you know, congregational singing, simpler melodies, you know, that stuff, more interaction. So Zoe also has some of the very traditional pieces in their books, but they've got a lot of Sekularides music, where you would never see in a very traditional Byzantine compilation, you'd never see his work included. But in the books from published by Zoe, they do have. So anyway, so if I open that to some of his, especially the liturgical pieces, you would see the resemblance from the Green Book to that, and even to some of the melodies that some of the later composers have put into the four part. He didn't do four part. And did you see the mention in there where, remember I gave you guys the patriarchal condemnation of four part harmony? And so he skirted that by doing only two and three part harmonies. So, okay, this is not tetraphony, right? So anyway.
I don't want to take us far afield.
It's okay.
So yesterday I was at St. George Monastery.
Sure.
There was no one to chant.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So poor Father
yesterday in the morning
was mm-hmm. not only doing the priest's part, he was also doing the chanter's part. And afterwards.
After this class, that would never happen again, right?
After this class? Well, here's my question. Other than the Green Book, which uh-huh. I really don't want to learn,
uh-huh.
I don't know of a resource that would, let's say, use the notation that we're using for doing the Divine Liturgy. There may be
St. Anthony's, yeah.
But I don't know, would he be startled if we were using...
If you did, okay, so... St. George, remember last week we talked about a little bit what's appropriate mm-hmm. in certain contexts. St. George's obviously is a small monastery with a small chapel, and so almost anything would be appropriate there. The simplest Kyrie eleisons are appropriate there, where you wouldn't do them in a cathedral, you would do them there. So the direct answer is no, he wouldn't be startled. If you had, for instance, if you knew you were going and you had 10 pages of music with you that was very simple, Kyrie eleison, Kyrie eleison, simple stuff. Agios, 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 or in English, whatever, he wouldn't be startled. Or, and even if he has a green book over there, by the way. Yeah, sure. And he doesn't, I mean...
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he
would. Not only does he not mind, he grew up here in the Green Book era. You know what I mean? And so if you asked him to chant something cold, he might chant you something out of the Green Book, just because that's,
You can't avoid the Green Book.
Right.
Book that we would use mm-hmm. the Byzantine notation.
That's actually a good idea. Maybe we should put one together.
Cool.
Maybe we should put one together using the St. Anthony's pieces. We'll just pick the easiest ones, and maybe we should put one together. And then we can practice it, and you can have it with you. And if you're in a situation where a liturgy,
because afterwards he was looking at everybody and saying, you should be able to chant the liturgy by now. You said to this lady, you're 60 years old. By now you should be able to chant.
So, no, that's funny. That's funny because it's more important. Now listen close. We have to put pride aside. It's more important that the liturgy gets done than that it gets done just right, as if somebody, like the ideal. That's not, the ideal isn't necessarily, it could be just that, an ideal, a goal, but it's not. That's right. So, in, I don't know, 2 weeks ago maybe, there was Father Vasily here, and nobody to chant, right? And Lori and my kids walked in, And Father Vasily asked Isabella to chant the liturgy, and she did, and Adriani. And so they sat, they went up there and pulled the mic up close, and they did the liturgy.
And God probably said, now, that was one of the best
ones. Best liturgies, right, because you know, you had no pretense, no chanter trying to sound good, like we all do, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, but so that's the point. Maybe we should, though. Maybe we should take that as a project to put together a simple, you know, because, you know, like I've told you guys before, a lot of the parts in the liturgy don't change. You know, the first set of petitions, the Kyrie eleisons, should be sung in plagal of the fourth tone. So just Kyrie eleison on C, mi, right, mi. And then you get to Desperes vias, ni papugadi, Desperes vias dis theotoku, second tone, soter soson imas. That should never change. You know, it never changes. I record liturgy from Greece every Saturday night and watch it on Sunday morning before I come here, because it's, you know, it's pretty late. They always do plagal of the fourth at the beginning. They always do Desperes vias in second tone. They always do Sosonimas seva, so son of God, in second tone. Sosonimas ia theu o anastas ek nekron psalondas ia alleluia, right? And then you do the apolitikion of the day, the dismissal hymn of the day. And then you do Agios o Theos, holy God, right? And that, the most correct version of that, is also in second tone. Right? So there's so many things that don't change that we should all be able to go up and at least do a good, give it a good shot, you know? Then you get into some, you know, like the cherubic hymn, a little bit harder, right? Communion hymn, a little bit harder. But you can, there's Sidoma, there's fast versions of that too that you could learn and do, you know, with just a little bit of practice.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
Services, so that they're doing.
Mm-hmm. So the way I learned to do service was not by learning how to read the music. There is a recording out there, which I can get you guys, that's done by I forget the exact name of it, but it's Angelopoulos' choir in Athens. He's Lycurgos Angelopoulos is his name. He's one of the most famous chanters. He chants at St. Irini in Athens now, but he's more famous for the choirs that he does, you know. And so that choir, I just, you know, always had it on, you know, listen to the CD of the church service, and you kind of learn how to do the church service. It's not like, you know what I mean? And then you look at the music and you're like, oh yeah, I recognize this music. That's what I know from memory, you know. And so, but you're right. There's stuff out there that you can listen to and find. It's just a matter of, you know, finding the time to do it and having the desire to go search it out, you know. So, hey. Uh-huh. You guys want to go downstairs? Okay, you can go. Okay, so anything else on that? Do you guys have any thoughts on secularidis or that I ignored? Or
sort of like, you know, my husband grew up in the Protestant church. My dad was Greek Orthodox, but threw it all out and was married. My mom was not any of that. So I came to the church about 10 years ago, and I always thought, well, we're traditional Christianity, whereas the rock concerts of the Protestant churches are not. And now I'm hearing about, especially I knew we had at St. Catherine's, but you know, it's like what we're doing there is like not traditional.
So I'll
I'm a kind of a traditional snob.
I'll defend it a little bit.
Okay.
The defense is that in this country, what they've tried to do, they meaning the bishops, because they're responsible for what goes on in the church at the end of the day, right? What they've tried to do, or what they've paid more attention to, is the theology, traditional theology, right? That the Orthodox theology does not change. And that we can honestly say is true. We can honestly say since day one, nothing has changed. Since the earliest ecumenical councils, you know, that talked about the triune God, that talked about, you know, the theology doesn't change. In this country, we have forsaken a little bit the other traditions that make up the Orthodox Church, like, and I may have said this before, architecture, right? Some churches are traditional, some aren't. St. Catherine's is of more traditional style than this one, you know? Some churches have beautiful traditional iconography, some don't, right? Although all of that was part of the, you know, was part of the true feeling of orthodoxy. Now, the church fathers, I don't think, intended it to be that way. They didn't want us to go build modern churches. They didn't want us to have churches without iconography. They don't want churches that aren't, that, you know, don't have priests running around censing all the time, right? Because it's the whole liturgy, the way we practice our faith is supposed to be sensual, you know, in other words, you know, evoke all of all of our senses, you know, you're supposed to smell, you're supposed to hear, you're supposed to see, you're supposed to, you know, and so we've done that part. Yeah, taste, right. Yeah, the most important thing, right? And I missed that one. And so, you know, so what are you going to do? But they've kind of separated the two, where my personal view is that we shouldn't be substituting our judgment for that of the church fathers, you know. There's a symbolic reason why Byzantine churches were supposed to be built in the shape of a cross, and why they're supposed to face east, and why they're supposed to, you know, and have a narthex and a nave and a, you know what I mean? There's reasons for all of that, and they're theological reasons. And so, and the bishops have just said, well, kind of enough's enough. You know, somewhere you draw the line so that the religion can survive and proceed. You know, if you said, well, we're never going to have a service unless it's in a Byzantine style church with a gold dome and full iconography, well, it probably would have never grown up in this country, right? Because even now, when you talk to Father Chrysodoulos, he's in New Zealand. Well, he's here now, but, you know, helping really form the Orthodox Church out there, you know, they're building churches, but they're building them like in little A-frame, you know, houses until they gain their footing. And so what do you get, you know, what's more important, the fact that they have liturgy or the fact that they have liturgy in a beautiful cathedral, da 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 da. So, you know, I guess we can. But you can be a traditional snob with respect to the theology of the church since that hasn't changed. And we never added the certain phrases in our creed or anything like that. So, should we do some exercises? So the symbols that we learn, if you look at this one here. You don't have it? Here, take that one. Take that one. The symbols that we had learned were the top four, right? Ison, Oligon, Petasti, and Kendimata. And Ison. What does it do?
Stay the same.
Oligon. Go up one. Petasti.
Up one with the flutter.
Good. So Kendimata. Softly, right. Beautiful. All right. So, and then we learn, so those are either staying the same or ascending, and then we learn the apostrophos, which goes down one, right?
Had you previously covered flutter and the softly? Because I don't.
Probably in the week that you weren't here, yeah. Yeah. So the flutter, it's just that. It's a flutter. You hit the note that you're going to, you go up to the next note and come back down. And so it's easier to hear than it is to explain. But I wouldn't worry about the softly part and the flutter part. You know that when you see a pedasti, we go up one note, right? So quick recap, everything is relative, right? We go up and down just for Xavier's benefit. I don't know if you have any background in Byzantine music, so it's a... Okay, all right. Okay, so that's all right. You'll just try to pick it up, you know, as we... So this is the scale. Nipa vugadike zoni, right? Should we warm up a little bit? Ni nipa vugadike zoni ni zo ke digavupani. So that should, it's just like the Western scale. We call our notes something different because in Byzantine music, then these mean something, you know? And so,
is this particular scale though tied to a tone? When we do the other tones, is it
good question. Good question. So the diatonic, this is the natural or the diatonic scale, right? This is what we always refer back to, and so that's why we learn this first. Okay, so everything that we learn later is we compare it to this. So we say in Plagal of the Second, we use a hard chromatic scale. So compared to the diatonic scale, the vu is very flat and the ga is very sharp. And so if you know what ni pa vu ga di ga vu pa, you know, so the intervals are different. So the diatonic scale is tied to first tone, fourth tone, plagal of the first tone, plagal of the fourth tone. So there, Byzantine music is divided into eight tones, one through four. It's written down in here, though. It's written in your Byzantine Music Simplified, John, so you don't... So, first, fourth, plagal of the first, plagal of the fourth. So that should tell us something right now, that there is a relationship between a tone and its plagal tone. You know, the plagal tone. So we know that the first tone is a diatonic tone. We know that plagal of the first tone is a diatonic tone. And I'll draw those parallels later, but it's kind of a lot to do now. And then second tone and plagal of the second tone use chromatic scales. They don't use the diatonic scale. They use chromatic scales where the intervals are moved around. You know, in second, they're moved around in a way that's called soft chromatic. And in plagal of the second, we use hard chromatic. And so one of them sounds more fluid. Second, soft chromatic sounds more fluid. And hard chromatic sounds pretty oriental, you know, pretty. And then, so we've done first, second, and the fourth. And so the third one is third tone and plagal of the third. We never call plagal of the third plagal of the third. We call it varis, grave tone. Third tone and grave tone use an enharmonic scale where it's 12, 12, 6. That's what you could play on the piano. But again, we'll get into those later. It's not, the enharmonic isn't hard to learn. The diatonic ones aren't hard to learn. The ones that are hard to learn are second tone and plagal of the second tone. Those will take most of our energy.
Which tones use the diatonic?
First, fourth, plagal first, plagal fourth.
Mm-hmm. And you said again, which one's the hardest? The second?
Plagal second is usually thought to be the hardest, and then second is also hard because... because of the different intervals that we use. Okay. So let's flip to page 4 of this one, of Byzantine Music Simplified. And here he recaps the... Incidentally, the person who wrote this is a full-time priest in Boston, and he's a part-time professor. Did you do any music there at all? No, just the liturgic stuff. Yeah. So he goes over Oligon, which we know, Petasti, which we know, Gendimata, which we know. So the next one down is he calls Gendima, or is called Gendima, as opposed to Gedimata, right? Gedimata is those little two hash marks that are always used just like that, Gedimata, you know, together. By contrast, the Gendima, the single hash mark, is always used in combination with something else. Okay? So that alone doesn't tell us anything. So how will we see it comes later. You know, it comes later, a few pages later. So the Kendima isn't worth really spending much time on because you don't see it alone, so you learn it when, you know, in the context of the combination symbols. And then the last one on this page is called Ipsili. Ipsili. Can you say Ipsili, Bella? Right. So again, this one depends on its usage. You know, it's never going to appear alone. So we should know what it's called and everything, but we have to learn it in the combination symbols. Okay? So next page, Ison, we know, neither up nor down. And then let's look at the descending notes. These we'll learn all these today so that we can do some of these exercises. And then every time you see it in the exercise, it'll refresh your memory as to what it does. The apostrophos, we know, right, goes down one note. So Xavier, what we keep saying, going up and going down, it's like a ladder. Byzantine music is like a ladder. Rather than being an absolute system of music on a staff where you know that if it appears here, it's a B. And if it appears here, it's a G. Byzantine music isn't like that. You have to know where you were in order to know what the next note is. Yeah, it's relative, right? It's all relative. And so that's why these symbols, we have to know, go up one, go down two, go up six, go down three, you know, all of that stuff. Okay, the next one, the next descending note, was there a question? It depends, right? Yeah. I think it's a lot easier than Western music. I might be wrong, but what do you think? Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a different language. It's a musical language. This is used in the patriarchates of the ancient patriarchates. So, Constantinople, Antioch, Jerusalem, Alexandria. Okay? So all the patriarchates that were formed after, you know, that like Moscow doesn't use it. In the Serbian church, they don't use it. In the Romanian churches, some places they use it. In some places that had more of a Slavic influence, they don't use it, you know. But language doesn't have anything to do with why they use it. It's just the maintaining of the tradition. Yeah.
So the Antiochian church here in the U.S., if you ask them about traditional, would they point back to Byzantine?
Mm-mm. But they're not that traditional. Right. Mm-hmm. What's that? Yeah, you know, I mean, they do some. Like if you go up to St. Spyridon, a lot of the people that go to St. Spyridon are just for geographic reasons, go to St. Spyridon because it's closer than the closest Antiochian church, right? Not because they're Syrian, right? Antioch is Damascus, Syria. Not because they have anything to do with the Arab world. They were converts that just happened to go to the Antiochian church. And so if you go and hear them and hear those people chant, they're not bad. You know what I mean? They try to stick with the tones a little bit. The biggest difference is that their second tone sounds a lot like our plagal of the second tone. In other words, they don't distinguish between second and plagal of the second. They, even in second tone, use hard chromatic intervals rather than the soft chromatic intervals, which you'll understand later. But that was the observation that I had right away. That, you know, you could kind of. All of the Greek tradition, is it based on Byzantine? All of it. Well, I mean, the links, you know, the links back to, again, what they thought was most important was adopting the theology, right? The orthodox theology. But then the church was placed into a context where they had their own musical customs and all of that. In the Russian church, for instance, when St. Vladimir imported essentially the faith, because they were literally in the Dark Ages, you know, literally, you know, the Russian people didn't know how to read, didn't know how to write, didn't know how to anything. And they brought in the Orthodox faith from Constantinople, right? He sent people down to observe to essentially shop around for a religion, right? And his people liked what they saw at Constantinople. And then Saints Methodius and Cyril went up and really taught a new class of clergy and bishops and all of that. And that's how Russia got their religion. But they also wanted to sort of have things their own way. They wanted the Western influence on their music. They wanted, you know.
Are there hybrids or echoes? You mentioned all this other church are kind of hybrids.
I don't know. I would think that there are. You know, there almost has to be, but. Yeah. You could argue that what we talked about earlier, secularities, yeah.
Is there two tones better?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, so that's. But the Byzantine music is used in the Greek Orthodox Church, you know, and if you go back and look at what, like, the Patriarchate of Jerusalem is called, it's called the Greek Orthodox Patriarchate of Jerusalem and the Greek Orthodox Patriarchate of Antioch. And so even though it lives in, you know, the Middle East, essentially, you know, so. And in Alexandria, they do, too. The Patriarch of Alexandria, which everybody knows is in Egypt, right? And he covers all of Africa, is a bishop, the patriarch, is a bishop from the island of Crete. He's as Greek as they get, you know. He's actually, his chorio is like 5 minutes from my dad's chorio. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's, you know, so the Greek influence is very strong, you know, still. Because the ancient patriarchates look to Constantinople, whereas the other ones don't. You know, they're essentially autocephalous churches, the new patriarchates. All right, so let's do the descending notes. We learned apostrophos last time. The next one down is iporoi. It's called iporoi. And what it does, akuste tora, what it does is go down two steps. Not jump down two notes, but go down one step, then the next step. So if we say, so it's essentially apostrophos, apostrophos, would be the translation. Of one iporoi, it's like saying, it's like having two apostrophe sequentially.